And when you learn how to read easily, you don't realize mm-hmm. all of the explicit instruction that is needed for, especially for students who struggle.
Welcome to Hallway Conversations. We're a trio of educators who have plenty of questions about teaching and learning and school culture, and we believe in the value of reflection and collaboration as we seek to keep growing as teachers. This podcast is our place for thinking out loud together about issues in education and why they might matter to Christian educators. Welcome to the conversation.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 109th episode of the Hallway Conversations podcast. My name is Matt Beemers.
I'm Abby DeGroat.
And I'm Dave Mulder.
Friends, thanks to our sponsors at CASE, the Center for the Advancement of Christian Education. To learn more about the different ways that CASE can support your school board, your leadership team, your teachers, or your community, we encourage you to visit their website at case.org. Finally, if you have a suggestion for a podcast topic, we'd love to hear from you. Send your suggestions to hallwayconvospod@gmail.com. That's hallwayconvospod@gmail.com. Today, we're grateful to be joined in the hallway by Dr. Gwen Mara. Gwen is a professor of education at Dort University. She primarily teaches reading and early childhood education courses. She completed her Doctor of Education degree at the University of South Dakota in Curriculum and Instruction with a literacy focus in 2014. She's also a graduate of Dort's Master's in Education and undergraduate programs, receiving her BA in Elementary Ed with endorsements in Reading and Early Childhood Education. One thing Gwen really enjoys is working with future educators as well as teachers in the field. She's a Wilson-certified dyslexia practitioner and the director of the Thrive Center for Achievement at Dort University. Welcome to the pod, Gwen.
Hi, Gwen.
Thanks, everybody. It's good to be here.
That sounds like you're a really big deal when I read that introduction.
I mean, she is a big deal.
She's actually a recent award winner, like, just to point that out. So, and for good reason.
No, not without the support of my team. Thank you all. Right. Yeah.
She's made the big check from next door in her office over to my office. Yeah, so we're really glad that she has come over. Yeah.
And we know who is the bigger office.
Oh, ain't that the truth. All right. Friends, today we're going to be discussing a topic that seems to have a lot of buzz, but a topic I know very little about, the science of reading. Before we delve into this topic, I was thinking about my own history, our relationship with reading. I don't remember learning how to read or even how it was taught back then, if I'm honest. And maybe there's something beautiful about having no memory of not knowing how to read. My earliest memories of reading are, quite honestly, sitting on the floor of my bedroom where I would spend hours studying the backs of old hockey cards. I also can remember the Sugar Creek Gang, Encyclopedia Brown, Henry Huggins, and the Black Stallion.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious for the three of you. What comes to mind when you think of learning how to read or where your passion for reading came, or even maybe a book or a series as a child that shaped your reading journey? Abby, can I ask you that?
I have very vague memories of, like, chalkboards and VOAC.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
what's
with
VOAC?
It's like a phonics program.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
And it's got like the lines with the little dotted lines in the middle and handwriting and sounds. But
amazing.
I didn't struggle to learn how to read, so I don't have a whole lot of memory of it either. Because kids who don't struggle probably don't remember.
Mm. Yeah. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
From my own growing up too, I didn't struggle with reading. I remember sitting on the couch playing church.
Oh, yeah.
And then I used the Psalter hymnal and I figured out what syllables were.
Oh,
because they were broken up for songs.
Yeah.
And so that helped me to figure out how to read. That's one of my first memories. I was probably 4 to 5.
Sure.
I'm going to be really honest. Like, I've heard a lot of people, like, play school. Like, I've never heard anyone play church.
Absolutely.
And thanks for a classic Psalter hymnal reference. For those of you know, you know. How about you, Dave?
Likewise, I think I was a pretty early reader. I don't remember learning to read. I have a few memories. Like, I used to watch Sesame Street a lot, and I remember, like, Two-Headed Monster sounding out words. words. Yeah, I can remember that. And so that's, you know, probably part of it. But I loved a lot of fantasy literature when I was a kid. And I can remember reading the Chronicles of Narnia for the first time. Yeah. And I must have been in second or third grade the first time I read through those. And I was absolutely engrossed, just totally hooked by those. Probably third grade was when that was. But yeah, just to have a series of books that just kind of captures your imagination and sparks it, like that can be such a powerful thing for kids too. Right.
Yeah. Abby, was there a series or books for you that you kind of remember?
You know, I think when I was real little, my dad read through all of the Little House on the Prairie books to my sister and I. So that's a strong memory. But I used to go just like check out tons of books and read all the time. Book It was a very powerful motivator for me. I really liked pizza.
But what is that? You'd read some?
Yeah, and then you get like a pizza certificate for like every how many.
Oh, I could have been into that as a kid.
Yeah, but I read a ton when I was a kid. Just anything, really.
And you've been a reader most of your life? Like, have all three of you been readers most of your lives?
Yes.
That's good. Thanks for that. Well, Gwen, we're here to talk about the science of reading. And like I said, it's something I've heard a lot about. Like, I have someone in one of my grad ed courses. I'm doing a project on it, and I think I connected them with you because it's like you need to talk to someone who knows about this. And it just seems like it's coming up more and more. And so I'm just wondering, maybe we probably have a number of readers who know a lot about it, and there's probably a number of listeners who know a lot about it, and a lot of people like me who know very little about it. And so maybe just a place to start, what is it? Are some of the principles behind it? Can you just share a bit?
You bet. So I would say that the science of reading is really looking at research regarding what we know about how students learn to read. And there have been podcasts that have been very popular that have talked about, for instance, Sold a Story, where they look at how research was kind of manipulated by publishers and by authors, and that it wasn't fully examined. And so now I feel like the real push is to look at what research actually says about how we learn to read. And so if we go back to 2000 with the National Reading Panel report, they identified five key areas and examined research in those areas and said these five areas need to be a component of reading instruction. And they included phonological awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. So that's what we're looking at. But the research hasn't stopped there, right? It's continuing on. And I think that's important for us to remember with the science of reading, is that it's not a fixed product. Just as the research is continuing to evolve and develop and happen, I think we as teachers, as professors, need to also keep learning.
Yeah.
And that's really important that we continually learn.
Can you talk a little bit? So the science of reading is partly in response to, you alluded to it, the Sold a Story podcast, which I've listened to, which I find fascinating, right?
Yes.
So, which is the whole language push toward methods of learning how to read that are not backed by science, but that publishers made a lot of money from.
Right. And I think the root of that is that, like we just talked about, our own learning how to read. And when you learn how to read easily, you don't realize all of the explicit instruction that is needed for, especially for students who struggle. And I think if you look at readers as a whole, most research would say that about 25% of readers are able to read easily with very little instruction. But really 60 to 70, maybe 75% of readers need explicit instruction, need more skill instruction to figure out the code between the letters and the sounds and how we put that together for reading and writing. And so that's where structured literacy comes in. Structured literacy is an approach that's grounded in the science of reading. And so structured literacy looks at things or stresses things like explicit instruction. So we don't make any assumptions about how students learn rules. We actually teach those things. It's very sequential. So we start from simple to complex. It's also cumulative. So we're constantly reviewing what we've already learned. And I find that as I work with students who struggle, that cumulative review is really necessary. When students learn easily, they might catch it in four experiences or four moments of teaching. When a student struggles, they may need 25. They may need 50. And so that constant cumulative review is important. Another aspect that's really important is multimodal learning. And so it's sometimes called multisensory learning. And when we're talking about that, we're talking about having students see, having students hear, and also having students write. And as long as we can involve as many of those senses as possible, we're making learning more memorable.
Would that be like tapping syllables too?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, on your fingers. My kids will do that.
You bet. So phonological awareness is hearing sounds in words. So that's really one of the first steps of reading. And so we often finger tap sounds. And different phonics programs will have different strategies to use, but really the tapping and hearing all of the sounds is the start. Then eventually you put those sounds with letters, and that's your phonics instruction. But of course, decoding itself is not reading, right? We actually need to attach the meaning. So it's important that with the phonological awareness and phonics that we're always working on building vocab, building fluency, so that students comprehend, because that's the goal. Comprehension is king.
I'm going to guess, I'm a high school, recovering high school English teacher, so by the time students came to my classes, many of them knew how to read, or somehow knew how to get by well enough. Some didn't, but they came to me kind of having the basics. My feeling is that there's probably people out there who have strong feelings about how to teach literacy. Like, am I right?
I think that is very true.
Probably people do have, like, maybe I've done it this way, you know, like, I've done it this way. There's evidence. My students know how to... to know how to read, I've done a good job with it. Why do I have to give that up for this? Like, what would you say to teachers who are maybe either resistant to new ideas, or hey, if I wait long enough, I'll just wait for the next thing.
And it seems that way, doesn't it?
Because it seems that way. So, and I mean that in a good way. What makes this different?
So I would tell you a couple of things. One thing. My guess is teachers who think that way probably never struggled with reading themselves. And one of the best ways to understand what it's like to be a struggling reader is to read a book. And a book that I have in mind is by Linda Mullally Hunt, and it's the book Fish in a Tree. And in that book, you have a student who's in fifth grade who doesn't know how to read. She can't decode. She has dyslexia. And you get inside her head because it's told from her point of view. And I have my students read that in one of my classes here at Dort. And it is by far one of the most powerful tools for them, because all of a sudden they're like, oh, I had no idea that's what it's like. And so I would suggest something like that for starters. And then I would encourage you, like, for instance, in my teaching career, I always taught phonics instruction. I taught in kindergarten, second grade, third grade. However, I didn't know how explicit the phonics instruction needs to be for students who struggle. Now I work with a lot of struggling readers at Thrive Center for Achievement, and I'm amazed at how explicit that phonics instruction needs to be. We need to pull that language apart into very small units and practice that. in order for students to be successful.
So when you say explicit phonics, can you give us an example? Like, what kinds of things would that look like?
You bet. So one of the skills we teach is like blending sounds. Mm. So oftentimes, like, students will not hear all the sounds in a word. So, like, we're talking the word track, T-R-A-K. You hear four sounds. Students might hear just a D at the front, D-A-K.
Interesting. Back
instead of track. And so helping them hear mm-hmm. all those sounds first, mm-hmm. and then we practice writing them. And so it's, for us, always the writing and the reading go hand in hand.
Sure. So that's where you might see, like, the phonological spelling yes. in first and second grade.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as an educator, you want them to try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because students need to try in order to get better, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Even if their tries won't always be perfect.
Yeah.
But they need to practice in order to become better readers and better spellers.
Sure.
So, Gwen, you work across the street from where we're sitting at yeah. at the Thrive Center. Can yeah. you, for just our listeners, talk a little bit about what the Thrive Center is, and then what does the science of reading have to do with your work at the Thrive Center? Because I'm thinking about some of our listeners who might be in work with similar students.
You bet. So Thrive Center for Achievement was founded about 2 years ago, and it's a center supported by Dort University. And our mission is twofold. One aspect is serving the community. So we provide tutoring services for children in the community. And it's one-on-one tutoring, and it follows the Wilson program. Another aspect of it that's really powerful for us at Dort is that it provides opportunities for our students to be trained as tutors yeah. and mm-hmm. to provide these services. So when students work at Thrive Center for me, they get trained in how to give explicit instruction, how to use data to inform our instruction. Mm. And to work with real kids, which is so powerful for mm-hmm. them, and do real work for real people. So it's really a powerful experience for all of us.
If you say with these aspiring teachers or even veteran teachers who are listening on the podcast, hey, the science of reading, I've heard about it, I'm learning about it, I need to take my first couple of steps into yeah. it. Like, what's a starting place mm-hmm. for someone who maybe is teaching on their own or isn't even part of a team to say, man, this feels like a lot. Help me out here, Gwen. Where do I go?
So there's a couple of places that you can go that are easily accessible online. So one of them is readingrockets.org. And that is, they have modules regarding science of reading, regarding dyslexia, and how to help kids. So that's a great source. Another great website is the International Dyslexia Association. Tons of resources there, both for parents and for teachers. Infographics. Just a ton of information, really, on any topic related to dyslexia. They have materials about helping English language learners who might also have dyslexia. They provide materials in both Spanish and English, which is also very helpful. And really, any area of structured literacy they look at and examine. And so that's a great resource to look into.
It seems to me, and maybe I'm way off here, it seems to me that incidents of dyslexia are increasing, or maybe just people are being diagnosed better for dyslexia. Maybe, am I onto something?
I think, so research tells us that actually about 20% of the population has dyslexia,
wow.
which is a huge number.
Yeah.
But that's also, it's on a spectrum.
Okay.
So there are more mild and there are more severe cases. Mm-hmm. So some people with mild dyslexia might be able to figure it out, so to speak, mm-hmm. although they likely will benefit greatly from the structured instruction.
Sure.
Students who struggle likely will not figure it out. They need explicit tutoring. Mm-hmm. That's something that we've seen wonderful success with at Thrive Center for Achievement. Because a reading disability doesn't mean that you are low in intelligence. Mm-hmm. Not at all. Mm-hmm. You have normal or high intelligence, but it's neurobiological. So your brain is functioning differently. Mm-hmm. And so it is difficult for you to decode in a way that seems natural to other people, although the ability to read and write is not natural for anyone.
Mm-hmm. It's learned, right?
So, yeah. It is learned. Yeah. It is learned.
So you're actually retraining students' brains with structured literacy. Students who may be wired not innately to learn to read and write.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I often tell children that I work with, well, for one thing, when kids struggle with reading, it's hard. So we need to motivate them when they come, right? We need to build up their self-esteem. They feel like they're struggling all day long, and then they come for tutoring, and that's hard too. Mm-hmm. And so we want to take small enough steps so that students feel success.
Yeah.
But we also try to educate them on what the steps that we're doing, how that helps their brain. And so there's a few analogies that I use that seem to be helpful. One is that the different areas of your brain that are used for reading have pathways between them. And oftentimes with a child with dyslexia, those pathways are not well connected. And so I said, think of it like a gravel road. You have to drive carefully. You have to drive at a slower speed. In Northwest Iowa, that makes sense. Yeah. We have gravel roads everywhere. And so what we want is through the practice that we do every day, it's like paving those roads. Mm-hmm. And we want them to be paved so that you can drive or so that you can read well. And then the comprehension piece and the fluency piece, we work on all of that to build those reading skills. Another analogy that I use that is helpful is that it's kind of like braces for your brain. Ooh. So a lot of kids have braces on their teeth, right? Yeah. And they don't just put them on for a day and then they get it fixed, right? Yeah. It's a process. Mm-hmm. They have to keep working at the instruction. We have to keep working at building those skills. But eventually, their teeth are straight. And eventually, kids can learn how to read. It just takes time. It takes a constant working at it, building those skills. Giving students materials in an appropriate order, so sequential, explicit, and cumulative, so that those skills are built. And as students show us that they're ready for new material, we give them more difficult things. Mm-hmm. So, like, for instance, we'll start with one-syllable words, and then we add on other areas as students show us they're ready for it. For me, it really sold me on it when I started doing one-on-one tutoring. And I saw a 13-year-old girl who was reading at a second grade level. And as she's reading after about 6 weeks of tutoring, she says to me, "Oh, I can read that. And it's the first time that it wasn't really hard."
Whoa.
And she's 13.
Yeah.
And now to see her go from that grade 2.5 grade level all the way to grade 9 in about 2.5 years.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yes. And she's tackling high school.
Yeah.
For the first time, she's reading at grade level, and she's able to do her work. Mm. And she got second place in a poetry contest, and she gets it. And the confidence that she has, I'm like, that is incredibly powerful.
And it's people think it's new. It's not new.
No, it isn't new.
And that's the other part, right? Like I did phonics when I was a kid. Phonics is not new.
Right. So what's new here? That was sort of my question.
It's much more structured
in
ways that are better, right? So we're taking things we've known and we're making it better by structuring it, making it more efficient and deep.
Yeah, and so I think in the past, like, phonics instruction was almost its separate
from reading
subject.
Yeah.
And now it's much more integrated. We're teaching these skills in phonics, and then we're applying them in reading, and we're applying them in writing.
Sure.
And so that's...
Yeah, it's more integrated, more efficient.
Yeah.
And also catches those students who struggle, whereas phonics alone, isolated, would not be as helpful to students who really struggle. So it's catching those students.
So if someone said, well, I was teaching this 20 years ago when I was doing phonics, there's an element of that would be true?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And now we just keep improving that. But it's also... There was also a system that went away from phonics towards whole language that did incredible damage, which is what that podcast is about. Okay. And so in a way, this is also a swing back from that. It's a corrective action, too.
Can I? I'm going to ask, ignorant question. To say, like, the damage whole language done, like, I'm not arguing with that. That's strong language. So I'm just wondering, can you share a little bit about that, in your opinion?
So I would say that whole language, like I said, worked for some kids, but a very small amount of kids. And that a lot of other kids struggled with it. Many eventually figured out the code, even though it wasn't explicitly
taught. Despite their schooling, not because of it.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Wow.
And then a lot of kids were passed along.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that's where a lot of damage was done.
Sure.
You know, and so that's...
It's essentially guessing what words mean.
Right. Yeah. Looking at the pictures, guessing, and that's what we're against.
Mm-hmm.
Please use the letters
to actually decode instead of just trying to guess what the word is based on how it looks.
The analogy I'm making here, because I'm a musician, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't read notes well. I know enough to be dangerous, so I'm kind of stumbling along, right? But, like, I can play things by ear, and if you sing something to me, I can sing it back to you, no problem, right? And there's kind of a similar thing happening here. It sounds like that maybe it's an analogy, right?
No.
But that's what I'm coming back to then. So, like, just that systematic, like, hey, we're going to be explicit to actually teach you the skills you need to know in order to do this work.
Yes.
And then to practice it.
Like, if you're exposed to what a word looks like, but you don't decode it, well, okay, but what happens when you come upon a new word?
Right.
You don't have the decoding skills then, right? You might know that word.
Yeah.
But then now we don't have the tools we need to tackle any word.
Right.
For instance, whole language would often, a lot of kids weren't taught explicitly the code, so they would rely on their memory. You can rely on that memory in first grade.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids
vocab is this big.
Right. Some kids can rely on it in second grade if they're really good at memorizing. But you get into third and fourth grade, and all of a sudden the content areas are much more independent reading and bigger multisyllabic words. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh my goodness, I can't read. And I've got a couple kids right now who are coming at third grade, fourth grade, who all of a sudden realized I can't read.
So you said, like, the critics are out there. So what is a bit of your response to that then, Gwen? Like, because anytime something becomes popular, people do push back.
Right.
And so what is sort of some of your pushback to the pushback?
I would say follow the science.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think, how can you argue that a child who struggles obviously needs explicit instruction in order to learn how to read? And by just reading to them or by having them guess, it's not going to work.
And I would say listen to stories of people. So, like, that podcast is full of stories of people who don't have dyslexia whose kids did not learn to read because they were not explicitly taught. How? And so I think just hearing that from people. My kid hates phonics because he knows all of the code, right? And so he gets real annoyed that he has to sit through systemic phonics instruction at school because he already knows it.
Yeah.
However, I'd much rather have that and strengthening than have a room full of kids who are not being explicitly taught and hoping that they catch it.
Catch it. Right? Which is so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gwen, I know that you have the tutoring center. I also noticed from my work that there are a lot of bills in Iowa right now that are being introduced wanting to expand structured literacy into schools and requiring it and thinking through how to build it into teacher prep programs, right? And requiring it, especially like K-3. What would you say to a critic who says, why invest all of this into the science of reading, if it feels like a fad, if it feels like something that the pendulum is just going to swing? For struggling readers, great, let them go to our tutoring center and use structured literacy there. But why are we investing into the mainstream education? Why require it in Iowa?
I would say try to live your day without reading.
Yeah.
You know, if you stop and think about that, you read all day long. And because reading is really a vehicle for all the other learning that you do, it is so important. And if you can't read, I feel like it's almost like economic slavery, right? Because how do you get a driver's license if you can't read?
Yeah.
How do you read a rental agreement? How do you apply for a job? How many jobs can you do without being able to read?
And there, to be clear, there are adults in our society who are in that position.
There are. And to those adults, I would say, hats off to you. You're working your tail off. And, you know, I appreciate all the work you've done. But I also would say it's never too late to learn how to read. And, you know, so I would say if at all we can help students learn how to read, I think as educators, that's important.
And this way is better than we've known before. And so it's important to keep implementing.
Absolutely.
Those changes.
Yes.
Gwen, I'm thinking of some of us are, and some of our listeners will be familiar with Teaching for Transformation, and I'm thinking about the through line of justice seeking. And you just talked about, hey, the ability to read a rental agreement, a driver's license. So is there like a, maybe I'm off base here, but like almost like an equity component to the science of reading? Like, or is that too, maybe too strong language? But I'm just, it just strikes me as you're saying that. Like this, those are justice issues in some ways too.
I would see it that way. Dyslexia is often something that runs in families, and so that can be challenging. But for me as a Christian, it's really important that I present instruction, literacy instruction, to everyone, because I really feel that everyone has the right to read, and and that ability. It just takes time.
Gwen, as you're talking, if I just think about my own kids or even working in an elementary school, learning to read is really hard work. It's exhausting. Like, I think if I had to go back, like, it's no wonder 5-year-olds or 4 whatever are so tired. Like, it's so hard. And you've alluded to that, actually, like the hard work of like of rewiring a brain. It's so important and it's so good and it's so tiring. So I'm holding that in one hand, and I'm thinking about how many parents who I talk to who say, I just want my kids to love reading. And I'm trying to, the tension of, man, this is hard work. Is it so hard that I'm going to lose my love of reading? Like, how might we do both? Does that make sense?
And I agree that that's really important, because quite honestly, the volume that you read impacts how good of a reader you are.
That makes sense. I mean, right?
And so I would say that there's a couple things you can do. If reading is really hard, keep working at it, but also fill your time with things like audiobooks. I think that's huge for building background knowledge, and that helps your brain have things to attach this new knowledge to. And so I think that's really powerful. Not that audiobooks will teach you to read. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying that is a tool that can encourage the love of reading and encourage students to build that background knowledge. It'll help them with building vocabulary. Yeah. And I just find that to be really powerful. Mm-hmm. And normalize the use of headphones and audiobooks. Mm-hmm. That way a child isn't singled out as, yeah, oh, he or she has to use the audiobooks. Mm-hmm. They must, yeah, not know how to read.
And also, even though there's structured literacy in schools, don't give up on things like social studies or science, because that background knowledge is incredibly important for students, too.
I believe that is so important. And I think that a lot of our reading instruction should use the science and social studies curriculum as the tools for learning to read.
So reading content area texts.
That is key. Yeah. Absolutely. We need more of that. Not less.
Right.
Sometimes people get wound up in thinking that we should have 3 hours of literacy instruction, and I'm not an advocate for that at all. Mm-hmm. I believe that every teacher is a teacher of reading, whether you're teaching science or math or social studies or even PE. Mm-hmm. And so how can we incorporate literacy into all of the content areas? Yeah.
Gwen, just want to say thanks for being here. And to our listeners, we'll put, Dave does a lot of the editing, and we'll put some links to some of the references to the books that you made, and maybe even the podcasts that you referenced.
You bet.
But just thanks for blessing us and for sharing and for helping us know a little bit more about this topic.
Thanks so much for letting me come. Yeah. It's my passion, it's my joy, and I love sharing about it. So thank you.
You bet. Friends, we know your time is valuable, and we want to thank you for joining us today for another Hallway Conversation. Whether it's this day, this week, or this month, we hope the Lord gives you what you stand in need of, and we'd like to send you from here with this blessing. So to our listeners, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace and give you peace and give you peace. Amen. Have a good week, everyone. Thanks for being here.
This podcast was literally dreamed up during one of our actual Hallway Conversations. Our music is by Ethan Mulder. Hallway Conversations is created and produced by Matt Beemers, Abby DeGroat, and Dave Mulder. Hey, we have a favor to ask of you. Would you be willing to rate this podcast or write a review in your podcast app? Or if you found this conversation interesting or helpful, would you consider sharing it on your social media? Those things really do help podcasters out, and we would be so, so grateful. Thanks for listening, friends.
That was really good.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah.